So it's the verses that Lina read earlier on, and this is really the context for what we want to share for the remainder of the meeting. And like I said earlier on, we really don't want this just to be a slideshow about Malawi, encouraging and interesting, though I hope that will be, but really wanted to extract from that sort of a key lesson, really, that I really feel that I've learned over these last few years from the work we've done there and in other nations, which goes way beyond just talking about mission in developing world nations. And these verses, to me, really seem to sum up quite a lot of what it's about. And as you remember, it's Jesus, as he often did, giving a sort of a farming, agricultural illustration, parable to talk about the kingdom of God. And Lina pointed out when she read it, you know, nowadays we'd be talking about a combine harvester, and sometimes it's difficult to make the cultural leap, both in terms of culture, nation, and culture in time. Just to say, when you do go to rural Malawi or rural Zambia or a lot of these places, these parables do come alive a lot more because actually they're still doing quite a lot of things in the same way. And when we use these actually in our teaching and in our training, people come alive to it in just the same way as I'm sure they did when Jesus first told them. And to start with, Jesus talks about the mystery of growing seed. Now, I know, I'm sure there's scientists in the room who could talk to me now about the molecular structure of a seed when it goes into the ground and actually kind of explain it. But the farmer in this part of this story doesn't understand what's going on. He sows the seed anyway, even though he doesn't understand all the science of it. He knows he has to sow the seed in order to get a harvest, even though he cannot explain in a hugely scientific way what is going to go on when that seed gets planted. And I think that's the first thing, the first lesson I've learned. We are called to sow seed. We are called to scatter it around. I know that doesn't seem very strategic. Sometimes we'd prefer to have a seed drill in it always to go. But actually, sometimes we are called to scatter seed. And there is a mystery to it. And very often, it will look ridiculous to us. John just said, you know, it didn't seem like the logical thing to do, to write what he wrote in the card. But actually, this is a time to scatter seed. Often, you know, doing the work that I've been doing, that Lina's involved in, very involved in, you know, people say nice things to you, and you kind of sometimes feel like you're being put on a bit of a pedestal of faith. And can I just tell you, it's really not like that. Time and time again, I've gone into situations, and we'll talk about Malawi. So in Malawi, and you go to a village, and you see the needs, you see the immensity of all there is to do there. And basically, my response, my first response, 99 times out of 100, has been the same response that the disciples gave to Jesus when he told them to sort out the 5,000 people, which was, send them away, it's someone else's problem. And I often think, you know, this is someone else's problem, Lord. This is Oxfam's problem, or this is Tearfund's problem, or this is World Vision's problem. It's someone bigger than, it's the World Bank's problem. This is someone bigger than me's problem. And basically, I, time and time again, have heard the Lord say the same thing Jesus said to the disciples. No, you give them something to eat. Literally or metaphorically. And there's a mystery to it. We do what we can do. We sow the seed. And we don't always see what happens next. But we can have faith that God is doing what only he can do. Just like he does literally with the seed that is sown in the field. There is a mystery to planting seed. But we still need to do it. Whether that is helping people in the ways we're going to be talking about in just a few minutes, or whether it is writing something in a card or praying for someone in a hospital or whatever it is, saying something that we feel so weak in, but trusting there is a seed that is being planted. And with all of the mystery of that, a leaf blade is going to push through, a head of wheat is going to be formed, and the grain is going to ripen. And the second thing is that as that happens, things multiply way beyond what we would think could happen. Here, a seed is planted and you get heads of corn. You get a multiplication of that seed. When we do a little thing in Malawi, it gets multiplied. The little lad brought his 5 loaves and 2 fish. A seed was planted. Multiplication took place. We can have faith that the little thing we do, even though it seems insignificant, God can multiply it to create a harvest. And we've seen that time and time again. So, just leave you those two words about those verses, mystery and multiplication. We might not be able to explain it all, but we need to have faith that God is working and multiplication will happen. So the nation of Malawi, very quickly, well, I turned first of all to the BBC website to try and get a succinct description of the nation of Malawi in that sentence up there in the orange. Malawi, a largely agricultural country, is making efforts to overcome decades of underdevelopment, corruption, and the impact of an HIV/AIDS problem, which claims the lives of tens of thousands every year. That was the BBC News website with an article dated April of this year. So you can sort of see that it's not the greatest place to live, or hasn't been, from a sort of a natural point of view. That's where it is. We heard from Julian Annie about Mozambique, and Mozambique kind of wraps itself around a lot of Malawi, and there's Tanzania there in the top right, and Zambia next door. Quite a small country, and according to the Global Finance magazine of February this year, it was 6th poorest nation in the world. Age, we talked about stuff we've been doing with kids. Well, there's the age distribution on the left of the United Kingdom in 2016. And over on the right, the age distribution of Malawi in 2014. As you can see, quite a difference. 60-something percent of the Malawian population are under 25. The median age, now median, for those non-statisticians amongst us, as I understand it, if we took everyone in this room, put you in a long line in age order, from the youngest to the oldest, the person in the middle would be the median. Have I got that right? Okay. So if you did that to the nation of the UK, the person in the middle would be 40.5 years old. Anyone 40.5 years old? I see that hand. No. Anyone approximately 40 years? No one's going to admit to it. Okay. That would be you. You would be the median age. And who's a liar, Paul? Yes. If you did that in Malawi, the median age would only be 16 and a half. Because of the effect of AIDS and all sorts of other things. The life expectancy is 57 if you're a man, 60 if you are a woman in Malawi. So it's so important to be doing something with all these thousands, hundreds, millions of kids. So in that context, the kingdom of God is like a farmer who scatters seed on the ground. What seed have we sown in Malawi? And you have been part of. So Lina's going to tell you about one aspect of that.
Thank you. So we have a project. Let me just give you a little bit more background. Andy has just finished being CEO of Lynx International, which is a small development charity based in the UK. I'm a trustee of that organisation. I also am a donor through my training business that I run in the UK, and I work as a volunteer as well. I go on trips. We often take teams of volunteers to go out and work in these villages that we've been mentioning. And my particular area is micro-enterprise development, so very small businesses, helping to set up tiny businesses with very, very small loans. And that's my particular area. Over the last few years, I've developed the training for that. So let me just give you a little bit of background to why I believe so strongly in MED. So I've got a number of different roles in Lynx, and one of those is to actually go into a village and train a committee to administer small business loans. And then what we do after we've done maybe 2, 3, 4 days training, we would give that group of 4 or 5 people a small pot of money, usually about £500-600. And their job is to start giving that money away in small loans. They might give 10 small loans of £50, £60. And this is fantastic news for the poor, because some of the nations that we work in, banks just simply will not lend to the poor. And even if they do, or that you might find a kind of loan shark, you know, someone else who will lend to them, they charge upwards of 40%. And I've even heard of 100%. And that's not per year, that's per loan cycle. So absolutely enormous amounts of crippling interest. So We don't charge interest, or Links International don't charge interest, and we don't encourage our loan committees to charge interest. So basically, for the cost of a takeaway for my family, we spent the day together with our kids and grandkids, for the cost of a takeaway, I could set up a family in business in Malawi. Very often the loans there are only £30. And better still, if I've done a good job with training the committee, and the loan pot is well administered, that loan gets repaid after 6 months, and my money can either give the family a second loan so they can build their business, or it could set up another family in business. So my £50, £60 just keeps on giving. And that repayment is really important. People often say to us, why don't you just give £50, £60? You know, it's not very much. But historically, we in the West have been guilty of giving aid. And aid is a bit of a dirty word, really, in our organisation. We give aid to Africa, particularly, has suffered from this, and then they become dependent on us when the money runs out. And the thing about MED, or Micro Enterprise Development, is that we're actually giving people dignity, and we're making them self-sufficient. They don't have to keep coming back for more when the money's used up. And our money keeps working. So my £50 is used again and again to set up families in business, giving them independence and enabling them to send their kids to school. That's a story we hear again and again. Schooling is in theory free, but you have to have uniform, you have to be able to buy books. Sometimes they need school fund, which is not school fees, but just a small contribution, and families simply can't afford that. But again and again, our MED recipients tell us, I've been able to send my kids to school. They might be able to mend the tin roof on their mud hut, or they might be able to replace the grass roof with a tin roof. They've probably been able to have two meals a day, and they might have even been able to buy luxuries like soap. So you can see why I'm so passionate about MED, because I just believe it makes such a difference. So let me just show you a few pictures. This is Royda. Actually, she's in Zambia, but as far as Malawi and Zambia are concerned, that's a British a border that we've put in, part of the same tribe. So this is Royda. You can see she's got a little hairdressing business there. This is a lady, I can't remember her name, but she buys and sells firewood. This lady we met, the little bags here, she's bought a huge bag of washing powder, you know, Dazzle or Omo or something, which they still have Omo there. And she's packed it up into little bags. People couldn't possibly afford to buy a big bag, but they one bag would be enough for them to do some hand washing. And she's making a business. She makes a tiny little bit of profit from that, so she's got to be very disciplined. This isn't a great picture, but I really wanted you to meet this guy's called German or Germaine, and this is his version of Starbucks. So basically, I met Germaine for the first time just over a year ago, and he had set up a little tea shop. They very rarely drink coffee, but a tea shop. And his house, actually in his house, he'd given over one of the rooms and made this kind of counter. Made of mud. It literally is, you know, the top of that is just mud sanded down. And he's actually on the road between the villages, on the dirt road between the villages. So people pass his house when they're going to the fields to work on their crops and things. And everybody knows of him. And he's just been a fantastic success. You can see from the picture here that he's just so charismatic. People want to be with him. And actually being in there, I've been in there two or three different times a day. There's always people there, often people outside queuing for their tea. And there's a real buzz. He's managed to create really his version of Starbucks. And he's a real businessman. You know, he's always seeing different opportunities. He started to buy groceries from the city nearby and sell them as well. So he's just someone who, you know what an entrepreneur is. He's just somebody who's always got business ideas. And we've got this project that we've only recently launched, which is that people who've shown that they can repay and that they're doing business well. We've got a project called MED Plus, MED Plus One, which basically we'll give a much bigger loan, or our partners will give them a much bigger loan if they can develop and they can actually employ somebody else. Because some people just can't run business, so we need to be giving opportunities for people to be employed as well. So he's a recipient of this, and actually what you see here is double the size of what it was last year. He used his loan to increase the size, and still you can see there's people waiting at the door to come in. So we're very proud of that project, and he's just a lovely, lovely guy, real integrity to him. And we've got a minute or so here of one of our loan committee members just telling you a little bit about their project and what they've done. And this is a team that Andrew Southwood and I trained a few years ago, and they come from a tribe of entrepreneurs. Just we know two or three people from this tribe, and they've just got ideas everywhere they go. It's somehow in their blood. Ngoni, that's right, Ngoni tribe. And basically, they're without doubt our most successful committee. When we were out there in March, they were telling us they had 136 loan recipients, and virtually all of them are managing to repay. So they've basically changed the whole community.
So it's worth saying this video was shot just over a year ago, and when you hear him quote the numbers and what they're aiming at, remember what Lina just said as well.
So they've got 136. They may well have another 20 by now. You'll need to get used to his accent, so you probably won't pick up everything he's saying, but we hope that you'll get the gist of it. This is Blessings, is his name, Blessings.
We started the micro-enterprise development in the year 2013, and we just started with a few people, but we have tried as much as possible to recycle the loans, and now we have about 77 beneficiaries. Of really, this has improved and changed the lives of people here. We had a lot of women who were suffering that they couldn't support their children with the school fees, but now they're independent, and even the project is self-sustaining. Hand in hand, we have to work hand in hand between us and the Wings International, and this has really been very good. You know, in those days, we used to be very worried with how we could. I mean, we're talking of day-to-day life, but now things have changed, that we can do things independently. I'm one of the committee members, and I can pledge openly that I'm going to work very hard in order to change the lives. That in 10, maybe like by next year, we can have about 120 to 150 beneficiaries, that maybe in the other year, we can have a lot of people. And what we're looking forward to is that we would like to see these businesses self-sustaining, that people will no longer be relying on loans, but they'll be doing things on their own. And we are really looking forward to be a self-sustaining Malawi that will no longer rely on donor aid. That's our aim. Thank you.
So one of the key things about our project, which is perhaps different to some others, is that the money no longer belongs to Links. It doesn't belong to donors. Donors give the money to Links, and then we give it to these committees. It doesn't belong to individuals, but we've learned over the years by making mistakes that if there's any hint of white money, Mzungu money, as they say, that's what the white man's called, Mzungu money, then the chances are it won't be repaid because of this whole history of aid. You know, the view, quite rightly, probably is, well, they're rich, they don't need my money. But because we're making clear that the money belongs to the community, it's not ours, we don't want it back, our donors have given it, they want to see community transformation, then there's much more seriousness and reliability about people repaying their loans. Now, just before I hand back over to Andy, we've got one little video that I wanted to show you. It's really nothing to do with MED, but we often attend a Sunday morning meeting in the churches that we go to. This was actually in a new church that we helped to pay for the building just over the last couple of years, called Koala. I can always remember that. I think of the bear, but it actually means shining. This was just morning service, and there's a choir here from one of the local villages, and it was just, Andy and I just looked at each other, the hair on the back of our necks stood up at the privilege of being in this place as these young people worshipped. And you'll see two little lads, they look about 8 and 9, they're probably maybe 10, yes, yeah, they're probably maybe 11 or 12, leading the percussion in the background, so watch out for these guys. Thank you. when you see those pictures on the telly of sad, hungry African kids, this is what this. There are sad, hungry African kids, but it's just such a privilege to be with these kids who they love God, they want to make a difference, they're committed to their communities, and you know, we go to serve them, but really we come away with so much more, so much more.
So, you've heard the song now, all together now. So, yeah, maybe not. Just for the last few minutes, I just want to highlight just a few other aspects of this sowing seeds. I think you've already got the idea from what Linus said, you know, just that one example of the Kalulu MED committee. Lina and Andrew went and did some training. They're really good, but it was just sowing some seed. Huge needs. What's going to happen with this? We put in a little bit of money, sowed a seed, and now the last count, 136 people running businesses, which is sustaining them and their families, just from sowing seed. There's a mystery. We don't really understand. You know, we've got a system, but we don't really understand it. How it all works, other than God. And there is multiplication taking place. I want to take you on a trip, metaphorical trip and a literal trip, really, from a village called Chapsinja to another one called Gunde in the central part of Malawi. Oh, yes, smiles at the back there from people who've been to Chapsinja. This is the village of Chapsinja. This was a few years ago now. There's a story behind this picture. But you can kind of get the feel of what a rural Malawi village is like. The building in the background is really very high quality. That was built for a school headmaster, I think, even at that point. But most of the rest of the buildings are more sort of mud bricks and so on. here's the story. Here's me sitting here. It was a few years ago, so you can see the brown hair rather than the grey. And I was going to leave that day. The rest of the team were staying on, but I was going to leave that day. Forgive me if you've heard this story before, but Chief Chapsinja had said the day before that he wanted to give everyone a Malawian name. So I had told him that if he was going to do that for me, it needed to happen that morning because I was leaving. So he actually, when we arrived that next morning, he had gathered the whole village. He spent some time preaching the gospel to them. He'd got saved a few years before. Then he did this ceremony where he gave me a name, but it wasn't just a name. It was actually his name, which was very, very special. And I then somewhat shakily walked back to my seat. I got as far as about here, and he turned around and said, "So have you got a name for me?" So I turned around and actually did have a name for him as well. I was able to give him my middle name, which is Peter, because he'd been talking about Jesus being the rock that he wanted the village to be developed on. And I said, actually, you are also that rock. And he took that very seriously. That was a few years ago. Roll the clock forward to last March, and I managed to see Chapsinja again. There'd been a bit of a hiatus in between. I won't bore you with all those details, but anyway, he's back. And I don't know if you can see, but he is wearing two badges. Both those badges have got the name that I gave him, and he still had them several years later. And it was a great thing to meet him again, to see how seeds that we had sown those years ago, actually, even while we'd not been there, had continued to grow. And the change in the village, guys, if you went there now, it is definitely on the up. And here's just a couple of examples. So, and this is how River actually has been involved in much of this. That's a diagram, really scientific diagram, as you can see, explaining how to make pit compost. Richard Emmett, who some of you will know from when he was church manager, based at the Journey Congregation, he came with us and he came up with a number of really strategic ideas for how people could be developed agriculturally. One was encouraging them to use compost that they make themselves, using, as you can see, water, soil, leaves, ash, and that therefore that is free. It seemed like a great idea to try, and Richard seemed confident about it, and he seemed to have got the idea as well from talking to local people, so we started teaching it. This is the effect. At the top, that's maize they have grown without using any compost. And at the bottom, that is maize they've grown using pit compost that they've made themselves. And the multiplication factor of that in terms of feeding families, I think you can probably readily appreciate. And on this trip, Chap Sinja very proudly showed us his field of maize growing very healthily. If I had even longer, I'd show you other slides of maize growing without it. But that is Chap Sinja's maize. He's holding a cob. It's very healthy. It's very large. And that he is pioneering that. And really, that is doing amazing. And that is Chief Biwi. Amazing. Yeah, I do use that pun in some of our publicity, actually, Paul. But I decided not to use it this morning. But there we go. That is another chief called Chief Biwi, and his maize, if anything, is even healthier, even stronger, even bigger. He was actually showing Lina that maize, and it is truly amazing. Another little thing that Richard and Andrew Southwood actually cooked up between them was to encourage people to grow moringa trees. Anyone familiar with moringa? Yes, a few of you. And if you use Body Shop products and you look at the labels, you'll see it there. It's kind of a trendy thing to add. Now, the moringa tree is quite amazing. If you do a gram-for-gram comparison, you can basically eat the leaves of moringa and you can eat the seed pods as well. But gram-for-gram, more vitamin A than carrots, more protein than milk or yogurt, more potassium than bananas, more vitamin C than oranges. So as a food supplement to help people with their nutrition in very poor countries, it is amazing. And here's the thing. If you look at a map of the world and plot where moringa grows really, really well, and superimpose that on a map which shows where there is real problems with poverty and malnutrition and so on. Guess what? They actually overlap hugely. It is God's provision, you know? We believe it really is God's provision. So we've been encouraging that. Over on the left are some seedlings from quite early on in Chap Sinja. Same seedlings in March this year. Growing really well. There I am with my friend Chief Chap Sinja again. And they are just about to, those trees are now large enough, they're just about to start using them. Over in Zambia, we actually saw the moringa being used, and it was being given as a nutrition supplement to children, a spoonful of powder you can make by drying the leaves and grinding them down, a spoonful of that powder a day, and the local clinic is reporting how the children are not malnourished in that particular community where they were before. So that is another example. You sow seeds literally in this this occasion and you get multiplication. So that was Chap Sinja and just a couple of examples of some of the stuff we've done being worked out there. Gunde. This is the first time I went to Gunde, and this is again how things multiply. So in every community that we go to, we train people with messages to do with community health care. They're not nurses and doctors, they're just ordinary people. But we train them with these key messages that they then go out and spread in their communities. We sow the seed of that teaching and training. The what they call the Village Development Committee, that's what they called it in Chap Sinja, went out in their village and then a little bit around the edge of their village, and then further and further out, and they were finally invited to go to the village of Gunde. To walk there used to take them, I think it was 2 hours each way, and they would. So in the end, we equipped them with bicycles, and they rode two up on a bicycle to get there. And this is, they wanted to show us the village of Gunde. This is the first time I went there, and they wanted to show us how they'd been doing training with those people, and this is them demonstrating a drama, actually, that they had learned to do with not drinking the local hooch, well, basically not becoming alcoholics. Interestingly, the lady, no, I can't do that, the lady here, who's taking part in the drama, is someone who got saved and joined in with all of this. She used to make her living brewing the local hooch. So actually, there was a real cost to her in all of that. Roll the clock forward again. Gunde is somewhere where we have seen a number of initiatives where we've sown seed being developed. Just one of them is being, I've had the privilege of doing quite a lot of leadership development with a set of chiefs, here they are, who are all centered around the village of Gunde. I am now honorarily called group village, group, hey, group, which means group village chief, Andy, which kind of makes me a sort of a bit of a super chief. But there we go. As I always say to them, if they actually ever took that seriously and put me in charge of a village, it would be a total and utter disaster, because I don't know their cultures, I don't know their customs, I don't know their laws, and I can't even kill a goat. So, but there we go. So here's a group of the chiefs, and this was actually last year when I was with them. But we've been doing some other things as well. So just going back to Chapsinja, a little while ago, we ran a couple of vocational workshops in Chapsinja. We ran the carpentry workshop down the bottom left-hand corner. That's actually that picture line I showed you earlier with the kids with the wood blocks. That's where that came from. And we also ran a tailoring workshop. That's Leslie from a church on the south coast, going and sharing what she can do, you know. And can I just say, Leslie kind of thought, you know, I don't really think I can be very useful, but, you know, I'll come if you want me to. And she's done amazing things teaching sewing and tailoring. She's not a quotes-unquote missionary, but she is. Never think that you've got nothing to offer in whatever context. God has equipped you to sow seed, and he has with Leslie. So that was in Chapsinja a few years ago. Here's another couple, Chris and Pat, doing some training to do with working with people who, again, had an alcohol problem. And they did a sort of a version of the 12 Steps program, basically, but being a bit more explicit about drawing on the Holy Spirit to help them. And they've saw amazing, amazing results in the village of Gunde. A huge group, actually, of people who had a problem in Gunde in that way, but they met with Chris and Pat over a couple of visits, and they formed a group called the Overcomers. I might have talked to you about the Overcomers before, but the Overcomers were doing so well in talking to others about the Lord and about not getting drunk all the time, that the local chiefs gave them some land to grow maize on so they could begin to sustain their families again. When Chris and Pat went to visit that field, they noticed that the maize was growing better on this field than the maize around seemed to be growing. And they thought, well, I don't think we've done the teaching about pit compost here yet, and I don't think these people would have heard it anyway. So they asked the Overcomers why their maize was growing better than anyone else's, and they said, well, yeah, it's interesting. In the mornings, in the dry season, in the mornings, there was a dew that used to form on the ground, on our bit of ground, that wasn't on anyone else's ground. True story. I've checked it out several times. God did what only he can do when we do what only we can do. So that's carpentry workshop, tailoring workshop, Overcomers formed. Wind the clock forward this March. Here's the Overcomers. And our partner, Hope Missions Ministries, have been doing carpentry workshops with them on the model of what we've done. And they've now formed cooperative business for the Overcomers. So they're making furniture, some of them, and selling it to sustain them and their families. And also with the Overcomers, they're doing some tailoring. And again, by the way, Leslie had this amazing idea. Wouldn't it be good if we could equip them with electric sewing machines and work out some way of making those work with solar? So she investigated all of that. She found an electrician to work out how to do that. She financed it, and here they are doing just that with the Overcomers. How these strands go together. Go back to that workshop in Chapsinja with which I just kind of asked some guys to put together at about 12 hours notice. We had no idea what that seed was going to do. Chris and Pat, retired couple, what can we do? Well, we'll come and share in the way that we can. We feel we've got some expertise with this. Seed is sown with people who you wouldn't necessarily say were, you know, super missionary, but they're just being faithful. Seed is sown and multiplication is taking place with people who really need it. Finally, this was in March this year in Gunde. The chiefs had heard that I was handing over the leadership of Links International. They were quite insistent that I would be coming back still, wouldn't I? Which actually I am. But they wanted to mark me doing that, and they wanted to honour me, which was amazing. And so right at the end of the day, they did this ceremony where in the top left, they took it in turns to shake hands with me because they said that indicated that this gift was coming from all of them. And then they handed me a package, and as you can see, it was a shirt. And guess who'd made the shirt? The Overcomers. And that was an amazing experience. We sow seeds, God brings the multiplication. And so, final question. That's Malawi, and I hope you're encouraged by that, interested by that. So many of you have been part of that in your encouragement to the two of us, in your financial giving, as Lina was giving an example of earlier on. That church, Koala, that we saw the choir singing in, this congregation paid for the roof for the toilet there, for the latrine. You've been involved in all of that. But the question is this, aside from all of that, what seed are we going to sow this coming 7 days? When God says, why don't you do this? And we say, that would just be a total waste of time. That will have no impact whatsoever. But we really do know it's God saying it to us. How will we sow in this next 7 days? So I'm just going to ask if we can just close our eyes for 30 seconds. And I'd like to pray. Father, I want to thank you for the increase you have brought through the seed you've given us to sow in Malawi. The increase that there's been for people's physical needs, the increase there's been in their spiritual development, in their knowledge of you. And as I've said, Lord, genuinely, it has so often seemed like that seed was like the 5 loaves and 2 fish from the little boy. And yet, Lord, you've brought increase, amazing increase and multiplication. Lord, I just want to ask for each one of us in the quiet now, Holy Spirit, would you speak to us about how we are going to sow seed in this next 7 days? And there are things you'll say to us now, but there's going to be things you're going to say to us over those days. Lord, would you make us responsive to you, Lord, to hear your voice?